So I told Henry that Phil Schuback, his first-year resident, had suggested that I speak to him. And then he became more serious for a moment. Well, he was serious, but he became more attentive. I think that's the word. If anything, he was serious. But for the first time, he became attentive. And he looked up, and he looked directly at me, and said, this is kind of personal. Henry's kind of idioms, strange idioms they use. I must have had a portfolio with me. He said, Lieutenant, he said, if you told me you had $10,000 in that case, and you wanted to give it to me, he said, it would be so unlikely that I wouldn't even open it to look. And he said, and you really might have the $10,000 in the case. He says, I need an endodontist for what I'm planning, but why should I believe you? That was his challenging comment to get things started. So I said, well, because I can do the job. And then I began explaining, you know, what I had been doing in Aberdeen and done endodontics, and I was very interested. He listened for a little bit. Then he said, are you qualified to take the boards? And then I knew I had him, because I said, there aren't any boards in endodontics, Dr. Goldman. And he said, there are going to be. So I saw we're in a chess match. I didn't even dreamed about, I knew there weren't boards, and I never dreamed there were going to be boards in this embryonic stage. So he said, there are going to be. He had been on insufficient conferences that he knew was going to happen. So I said, oh. So I said, well, how would one qualify then? And he said, do you know Dr. Grossman? And I said, I know who he is. I heard a lecture that he gave at the Second District Dental Society in Brooklyn, you know, just a year ago. He said, no, do you know him personally? I said, no. And he said, when Lou Grossman says that you can be my endodontist, you can be my endodontist. And that was the conversation. So I got in my car and drove to Philadelphia.
Did he give any direction suggesting that you contact him? He just worded it that way?
And that was it.
All with you.
But Henry and I learned how to read each other.
Okay.
That day, we learned how to read each other. So I just drove to Philadelphia with Joan, and the next morning I waited at Grossman's doorstep the way I waited at Goldman's doorstep. And Lou was coming back from lunch, I remember, and he was hurried. Oh, was he busy? He was just racing along. Where Goldman was inattentive because he just wasn't looking at me, Grossman was looking at me, but was he impatient? Raj, you'll know when listening to this that this is the this is a break in the tape. As long as we're recording things, I'd like to drop on this. The fact that I have never forgotten the first meeting with Goldman and Grossman. And this is why I do that whole hour interview, you know, that you had for the applicants. Because even if they're not going to make the program, they're going to remember everything that happened. They're going to remember as well as I remember my first interviews. And I make that assumption. So, you know, I try not to meet people who I don't think I'm going to take. But if I'm going to meet them, whether I'm going to take them or not, they get the full opportunity to express themselves, because they're going to remember that, win, lose, or draw.
It's an encounter of the first kind.
Mm-hmm. I remember your interview, too.
I remember my interview, too.
Okay. But people remember these things, so it means a lot. Anyway, to get back to this, Grossman then paid a little more heed to what I was saying, and I told him exactly what Goldman said, that he anticipated there were going to be boards, that Grossman might know something about this, and that Grossman had to give approval. Now, you asked whether or not Goldman had suggested that I mention his name or given me a program for addressing Grossman. He didn't. He just said when Grossman says it. Like that one sentence. And I just went ahead. So the response I got from Grossman was my lead into endodontics on a formal basis, but it was casual because he didn't take it too much to heart either. Now, he wanted to do something, and I'll tell you the little that he did at that moment. I said, how would one qualify for boards then if there were going to be boards, Dr. Grossman? I felt I was detaining him. He seemed like he had to get on to something else. Goldman did too, but he didn't seem to care. It didn't seem to bother him whether I stood there or not in Boston. Grossman seemed, he wanted me to get on with it, you know, to be left alone. So I said, how would one qualify? Are there graduate programs? And he said, not really. By the way, he had his graduate program years after I had mine here in Boston, which was a crime, and he may not have told you, but I think he was treated badly in those years by the University of Pennsylvania. I don't know if you have this in your recordings, but he was treated very badly, in my judgment. He didn't get to be a full professor until after I was a full professor. And he didn't have his program for years later. He had to use mine as a model to get his. Not because he didn't deserve it completely, but badly used by that university, in my judgment.
They just take him for granted?
Took him for granted, and they also thought he was a character. They didn't realize what he was doing. To take for granted means, you know, I think you mean fully appreciated and then ho-hum. I don't think he was appreciated. He was some kind of aggressive nut who was writing books on endodontics. And the Dean Burkett, bad news as far as Lou was concerned. Lou wouldn't admit to this. He's too much of a gentleman. If he's anything, he's a gentleman.
No doubt about it.
Complete gentleman. But I don't think that... I can tell you people who were where I was when I was there at different stages pretty much agreed. There was a fellow, Ned Williams, I guess, head of bacteriology at but it's worthwhile. Lou, for some reason, wanted to be the editor of the endodontics section of the Triple O Journal. He had a floor fight at the endodontic meeting against the fellow from St. Louis who was the editor. Another character who had a mental breakdown subsequently, whose name will come to me, had a floor fight. And this fellow, who was the editor at the time, was able to read a letter from Ned Williams from Pennsylvania, derogatory letter, making allusions to Lou. He was head of microbiology and much more important in the university structure than Lou. So he never really was appreciated there. In any event, to get back to there were no graduate programs, he said. He said Illinois would put something together from time to time, a put-together. I think he suggested Indiana had a put-together, but nobody had a formalized program in endodontics. And Michigan, maybe Michigan had. Michigan, I think, did have the program. So Michigan had the one-person program, maybe, in those days, as my memory serves me. Penn had nothing. Illinois had a put-together. Indiana had a put-together, meaning if you had a student, you took courses out of the catalog. Might be interesting to know that Ingalls tells a story about when he went to Michigan for his graduate program. They gave him obstetrics, and they just took courses out of the medical school catalog. He has a story to tell, you know, about what graduate training was like. So Lou said he had nothing. But he said, why don't you take continuing education courses? He said, we offer some here. And I don't remember then that he was helpful. But I mean, he was helpful, yes. He was polite, but he wasn't a partner in this idea, you know, at that day.
The continuing education thing, are guys like Stewart and Sioliot, are they involved in that?
No, Sioliot graduates in 1953, the same year as I do. Okay. He graduates from Penn, the year that I'm graduating from NYU.
And George probably just a few years, 2 or 3 years?
George is older than he looks.
Oh, okay.
He's older than he looks. Okay. George, let's make him 10 years earlier.
10 years.
But can we talk about them for a second so you get them in perspective?
I'd like to... A guy like George, did he just work side by side with Lou? Or
yeah, should we digress from me for a second? We'll come back to it. You wouldn't lose track of this, right?
No.
Yeah, I mean, not in how you want it.
Okay.
But let me tell you a little bit about that. Oliet, intelligent, aggressive, graduates in 53, no training, latches on to Lou, teaches at school, and becomes an assistant to him and begins to learn on a preceptorship basis. Bright as hell and learns fast. Good hands. Good head, aggressive, intelligent, and he gets to be an assistant to Lou. Stewart, who is basically interested in perio and oral medicine, begins to teach with Lou. Being very aggressive, he starts publishing some papers. Pretty soon, he's got a nice academic background, also good hands, different than Cy, calm, controlled. If anything, about George, he's a controlled person. He could be at a meeting if it's quarter to 10 and he's expected home at 10, he leaves.
Wow.
Just leaves. Controlled, very controlled life. Always been a controlled individual. Cy is aggressive. So Cy picks up onto this, Stewart's on Lou's coattails. He gets on Lou's coattails. I mean this in the best sense.
Mm-hmm.
They're learning from Lou. George is vastly less aggressive today than he was in those days. But he became a disciple of Lou, in a sense. Cy then became the second of the disciples. Okay. A problem arose between Stewart and Grossman, which none of them, I'm sure, will ever reveal, and would like to believe it never happened, and can't be all that important in personal relationships now. But Stewart left that little triumvirate and sought a haven at Temple at a time that I'm going to be at Temple in the story within a little while. I'm going to be at Temple, and Stewart comes over to Temple at a time when he and Lou have had a little falling out, the nature of which I have no idea, and probably most of the people you interview don't even know it ever happened. But there's a time in that triumvirate where Stewart leaves Penn to go back later. Then he stayed at Temple after I left. But let's get back to Cy never left. Something else very odd. I'm giving a lot of personal stuff here, Raj, and I hope it's put to good use.
And it will be.
Okay.
It'll be good and it'll be discreet.
For some reason, it's hard to explain, Lou, in all of the years that intervened, we're ahead of it now, felt closer to me than he did to those guys. Oliette would have to call me to ask me about Lou. And this explains Lou a little bit. See, it's not logical. He should be taking Oliette under his wing instead of me. Because in the ensuing years, he takes me under his wing, and, you know, he wanted me to co-author the book with him. We had the problem with, for different, we had the problem with for psychological reasons because of this father-son relationship. It's why Engel didn't stay with his dad, you see. So throughout the intervening years, we're going to see, I'm Lou's confidant all the time, instead of them. And I guess one can analyze it. It's hard to. Maybe he was too close to them. And he's such a formal person that maybe it was more comfortable for him in the intervening years to be closer with me, less close to him. Maybe if I stayed in Philadelphia next to him, I'd have the problem that the others had. They would admit to it, but there's a lot of problems. Later on in their story, not mine, you know, you may remember when Stewart became head of the graduate program, when he came back from Los Angeles, he may tell you whatever he wants, but Cy really stole that job away from him, even though they all love each other and they kiss each other and tell beautiful stories about each other and make speeches about each other. Cy cut him out of that job. The graduate students loved him, loved Stewart. But Cy maneuvered through A.O. and Walter Cohen to, so the three of them, basically, when I'm talking now, Oliette just appears on the scene as a recent graduate, same year, offering his services, and Stewart is there because he leaves within the next year to go to Temple, and Grossman's offering continuing education courses in endodontics the same way that Goldman is offering continuing education courses at Beth Israel Hospital in Imperial. And the only other really established courses, except Harry Albert and other teaching people for $100 a day in their office, is taking place at Michigan. And all the other stuff are put together, is really put together. Maiden and Hine has been president of everything but the United States. You figure out how much endodontics that man really could have done. Yeah. You read his curriculum vitae and you figure out how much endodontics could he really have done? Damn little, because he didn't have to do much to be called an endodontist. Okay, Lou suggests that I take some continuing education courses at Penn with him. And as I say specifically at this time, very definitely, there's no attachment. There's no emotional attachment here. Well, I can take him or not. That's all the same with him. That I'm giving you a post-interpretation of an interpretation I had then. Although then, not knowing how close we were going to get, it seemed reasonable for a second lieutenant who walks off the street and catches him when he comes back from lunch. We did not have an appointment. Grossman, Goldman at least expected me. Grossman didn't expect me. I just told the secretary, here I am. I just drove from Boston on my way to Maryland, and here I am. So I was really an intruder. So I didn't realize then how I didn't consider the offhandedness or the formality unusual, but I'm telling you now in terms of what happens to the relationship, that was a very stiff relationship then. Yeah, lieutenant, you want to take him? Take him, you know. You want to get rid of me? The Goldman name stopped him for a minute. He gave me some information. I was grateful. He couldn't recommend any of the graduate programs. You want to apply to Michigan? Apply to Michigan. But zingo, zingo, that's it. I then went back to Aberdeen, mulled it all over, And I took the only course I could take. I started taking continuing education courses with him. I registered for his two-week course. Joan was pregnant. On the second day of his program, now I really want to be an endodontist in Boston. My mouth is watering and I got to do this somehow. I'm convinced I could do it without any training, but now I've got all this, these blocks put in front of me. It's like the boards today, you know? I've got to get over that hump. Joan goes into labor. 9 hours of labor on Tuesday of the second day. And boy, my career has gone up the chute. How can I impress Grossman? I don't even show up for the second day of the course. Eddie was finally delivered late at night. That was one hell of a day. And Aberdeen, some distance from Philadelphia. And I now begin 8 days of going back in the evening to see the baby and the wife. And every morning getting up, I would go to sleep with the lights on. So I'd wake up in the morning, you know, getting up at, I don't know what, 5:30 or something, and driving up to Philadelphia. I'm known as a conservative driver. You should have seen me then. I mean, I was going 90 miles an hour, cutting cars off like I was crazy, going through red lights, jockeying to the front, driving on the sidewalk, and going through Delaware to make sure that I'd, in Wilmington, I'd get past red lights first, racing up to Philadelphia. And I remember telling him on Wednesday, you know, my excuse. My wife gave birth. He said, that sounds reasonable. Telling me a story about his son, Dick, who's been very close to us, stayed at our house. You know, we're very friendly with him now, but I hadn't met Dick at the time, though. And Emma May's delivery of his first child. And, you know. Anyway, that was some experience. But I completed that program. And
in that program, was Dr. Grossman giving the course himself, or was...
Giving the course himself. And then you went into the clinic, and in the clinic, there was George, and there was Cy. But they didn't give any lectures. He gave the course himself.
How many days? That was 8 days in the course?
And no, it was 10, but I... First day I went to, the second day. Okay. I missed it. And then it was 8 days. It was like our comprehensive course plus, say, clinic participation.
Okay. Clinic participation was 1 week, 2 weeks, or what?
It was all together in this 10 days. You had to put in the PBSC and get the negative cultures. And was I impressed with the PBSC, because that stuff went into the test tube and there's no way you could get any cross in those tubes. But I was tremendously impressed. Now, I remember writing every word that man said in those notes. A lot of what he said I thought I knew, but I wrote every word anyway. I remember writing on my pages, LG says. He'd say something I thought I knew. I said, LG says. Absorbing this. I got a student this year who was doing it, a kid from Bethune, Jay Bethune, his name is, from Detroit. I can see him doing it. He's writing in his margin. He's taken 8 of the continuing education courses, been in practice 9 years, and he takes notes like wild. I know what he's doing. I can see the phenomenon occurring in it. HSS. But I was doing that. LG says. At the end of that program, or maybe one more continuing education program. That's vague to me. But either at the end of that one or the next one, because he only had 2 or 3, and I registered in anything he had. Fought to get the leave time from the colonel down in Aberdeen. It was very important to me. I remember I'd come back from a program, and then I'd give a seminar on what I'd learned to all the guys who wanted to listen. And whether, if they wanted to listen, they got a lot of good endodontics. If they didn't, they got bored stiff. Because I had to tell him everything that was happening. Everything. Raj, in those days, I kept a card on every patient I treated at Aberdeen. I had card cataloged and being filled up. But I kept a history for myself on every reaction, everything that happened. I made a research project out of every single case, and I was doing army, you know, 10, 12 patients a day. But I kept every single one. Started recall systems when they went overseas. I got sick because I couldn't follow the damn things along. But started way back then. By the time I was waxing up posts at the time, they wouldn't put crowns on those anterior teeth that I did unless there was a post. And I was doing direct wax-ups of posts and cores, but not the crowns. Never did a crown on them. But I would do the direct wax-up. I'd make the post base, direct wax-up, cast it, finish it, and give it to the Crown and Bridge Department. Posterior teeth generally didn't have posts, so they got them right away when I got done with them. But anyway, a key thing happens. At the end of one of these programs, couldn't have been the first program, maybe the second, maybe the third. And me being as attentive as I could be, and hoping to God that he'd recognize me as being different from the other people. You know, praying that he'd recognize that I was different. I was afraid I wasn't transmitting to him that I wasn't one of the general dentists in the group just playing at this, that I really wanted to do everything I could. On a Friday of maybe the second course, with me exuding all kinds of enthusiasm, not knowing if it's getting through, and you ought to know about me too, feeling different. Remember this training I said that I got? Mm-hmm. General dentist from St. Louis, I remember a guy, a different one in the course. I said to myself, these guys are general dentists, I'm an endodontist. My own image, each night. And I was wondering, does he know it? On a Friday, maybe the second course, and I was several months into my wanting to do this, he called me into his office, and now for the first time he was friendly. I thought he thought I was a pain in the ass, actually. This was my self-concern. He must think I'm a pain in the ass because I'm asking questions, you know, endlessly, and writing everything down endlessly, and feeling very different than the others. Really feeling that, maybe the second course, but doesn't he know that I'm not one of them? Called me in on a Friday, and he said, Sheldon, you're really interested in this, or something, you're seriously interested in this, aren't you? And me saying to myself, what the hell did you think? To myself. But that was the another big breakthrough. He said, you're really interested in this. He said, how would you like to take some advanced training? And I said, but you don't have a program. He said, I know I don't, but there's an opening at Temple. And then he explained to me that he called Walter Cohen, and Walter Cohen could tell me about it. Now, don't forget, Walter's young. He just left Boston. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't know who he was anyway, but he was just a year out of Boston or so. He said, Walter Cohen is over at Penn. He has a friend, Morty Amsterdam, and they need somebody over there. And he called Walter on the phone. I spoke to Walter, and Walter said, sure, right, we need somebody and for a... No, Walter was at Penn, but Walter then made the contact for Lou with Morty. And Morty was at Temple. Morty Amster, who's now at Penn, was at Temple. In fact, he was head of endodontics. Did you know that? Morty Amsterdam was head of endodontics at Temple. I got it better now. He called in Walter Cohen. Walter was at Penn. He called Walter in. He introduced me to Walter. Walter called his good friend Morty. That was it. Henry, Lou, of course, knew Morty, but Walter knew him better. And that's right. He said, you're interested. I think there's something over there. Let's pursue this a little bit. He then called in Walter. I met Walter for the first time. Walter called Morty, and they made an appointment for me to meet Morty. That was it. Now, the thing that was at Temple was what they called a teaching research fellowship in endodontics. It was as much as you wanted to make out of it. Lenny Parrish had had one of these. I was maybe the second, maybe the third person to have it. And what it amounted to was Morty was no longer wanting to devote that much time to endodontics. He was establishing a tremendous name then in Crown and Bridge. Nobody thought of him as being an endodontist anymore.
That's right.
Well, he had never been a limited practitioner, you know, but Morty is a guy who could do almost anything anyway, so endodontics was one of his shticks. He was an associate professor of endodontics and chairman of the endodontic department, and that was not a division of operative. At Penn, it was a division of oral medicine. There was no endodontic department. Grossman was head of no department. There was a little piece of oral medicine under Burkitt. Amsterdam was head of an endodontic department, not a piece of anything, but its own department with its own clinic, its own confined walls. You open through a door, its own clinic, not a piece of a big overall clinic at Temple. I didn't know any of this. I found it all out as this unfolded. So he was looking for somebody to look after the operation for him while he was not there. As many graduate programs in your day were not really training programs. You were slave labor. A lot of the programs are nothing but slave labor. You went in and you did slave labor. You taught. So that's what this amounted to, but I didn't know that. And I went and I made an appointment with Amsterdam. Was I ever impressed? My God. That day I drove up from Aberdeen another Saturday and visited Lou's office. Got another fast shuffle because Lou's always fast. He was in the medical needle, and I was surprised that you come in one door in his office and leave another. That's the way he had the traffic flow. Think of that, Raj. You didn't leave through the door you started from. So everything was always moving when you think of rapid operation of endodontics. With all Lou's good things, he taught people to work for low fees too fast because his own self-image wasn't right. The need to write all those articles also was a self-image problem, you see, if you can be that psychoanalytical.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
To value what he's doing. The need to write all that stuff, 300 articles, which is a tribute and a benefit to dentistry. The hours away from family doing that, you know. It's trying to say, hey, I am really worth something. Well, I wish he had said that in terms of what was going into the mouth, because he was doing abutments for less money than Amsterdam was doing podics. You know, in a 14-unit split, he'd do the molar for less than Marty would get for the podic, even today. So, I visited him, I went through one door, zoom, zoom, zing, zing, out another door. Then I went to Amsterdam's place. And even then, Amsterdam had about 15 people in help, and with his white buck shoes and his whole operation and what do you want for lunch. They had the menus from 4 different restaurants, and you ordered it, they brought it up. You know, relaxed atmosphere, and very impressed with it all. I went back and told Joan, wow, it was wild. Anyway, he was impressed too, because I brought my curriculum vitae at the time, and I had been a straight A student in college for the first 2 years anyway. I got a B in my third year. Made me sick at the time. I used to wonder how any schnook can get a B. How can you get a B in a course? I thought, until I got one. It broke me up. I tell you, this is all fun. Going to school was like a game. I read when I was 3 years old, you know. I was reading when I was 3 years old. And I went to grade school. I was in the first grade for 5 weeks. They put me in the second grade. And 5 weeks later, they put me in the third grade. And then I did some other skipping. That's why I was out of school so early. I extended my high school. And college, it took the full 4 years. Last year, I was taking archaeology, anthropology, Wagnerian opera, public speaking. I had taken 36 credits in biology previously, and chemistry minor and the whole damn crap. It was all a game to me. So Morty, I guess he had my transcripts folded in the middle. He didn't see that B. he saw the A. So we impressed each other. And he said, you got the job. And I was so excited to be in that job. So I got to take that thing on September the 8th, 1955, my birthday. I went into the Army on my birthday, got out of the Army on my birthday, and started at Temple the next day. So I took this teaching research fellowship. Now, I made a lot out of it. I discovered there was an animal room on the roof of the building that nobody had used in years. The building was shared by the dental school and the pharmacy school. Hadn't been a dentist in it forever. I don't think there was any heat in it when I found it. And even though George taught me a lot in endodontics, I taught George where that animal room was, because George did a lot of stuff in that animal room years later that I had discovered. I worked my ass off. I decided not to take the Pennsylvania boards, which I've recommended to students here many times, but I wouldn't insist on it because I know they need the money. I decided I wasn't going to make that much money. It's 1 year training. That I should lose the opportunity because I did everything, you know, 100%. And I was afraid if I had the boards, I'd work 100%. You know, I'd make a lot out of that. So I didn't. I began giving the lectures to the dental students. And Spencer remembers the lectures I gave to him. He was one of my students. Seymour was one of my students at Temple. And boy, you know how I gave lectures so glibly today? Did I practice those lectures? I'd stand in the apartment up there in Philadelphia and practice talking to the walls. I give 5-day courses in Europe now. My preparation is while I'm shaving at the hotel, you know, before I step on. But I used to practice those lectures for the students. I would come in before the lecture and put the diagrams on the board. I would come in the day before and put the diagrams on the board and go to the back of the amphitheater to see how it looked, knowing it's going to get erased and put it back the next day. But I was rehearsing these lectures. I had been teaching the biology, you see, and I had some insight into teaching. And can you believe it? I'd go in and put a diagram of an access cavity in the board, go to the back of the amphitheater, and see if it was visible on all sides, and whether it would look good, and whether it meant what I expected it to mean. So it was tremendous proving grounds. Amsterdam came, and listened to the first two lectures, and then says, you got the rest of the series, it's yours. So, as I say, you make what you want out of it. I got some rabbits and took them upstairs to the animal room. I began the work with the inflammatory potential of the drugs. And I made a lot out of it. I worked through Christmas holidays. I worked through Easter holidays. I worked day and night on the damn thing. And I decided this was my proving grounds. Of course, I had to prove it to this Goldman figure somewhere stuck up there in Boston who started this, who didn't say when Amsterdam said, but who said when Grossman said, I got to do this for Amsterdam, was going to tell Grossman, who was going to tell Goldman. And besides, I was curious. So I started research at Temple that had never taken place before. I got interested there in swellings in after surgery. Trypsin was popular then. We had a fellow on the staff was using trypsin. I said, the answer is in delicate work. The large access cavities that I introduced into endodontic surgery, the bigger the better, were then. I made a study with them, 40 cases each. We went to the photography department, pictures before, pictures immediately after, one day, 48 hours, 1 week later, all angles. Who's got more swelling? You with the trypsin or me with whatever? And I began to figure, what's whatever? How can we not have them swell? Make the bigger access cavity, bear more bone, don't pull on the flap. You know, all the things that that we subsequently did. The quercetin business happened then. We had terrible flare-ups in that clinic at Temple. I couldn't believe the flare-ups. Couldn't believe it. We didn't have it at NYU. I didn't have it in the Army. Terrible flare-ups. They took it for granted. And I began to analyze what causes flare-ups in endodontics, which was that original quercetin work that was published later. But I did all of that there.
Had the rabbits up in that room?
Had the rabbits up in that room, up in that place. Now, while I was there, a guy appears who looked so young. I had an office of my own. It was Amsterdam's office. He gave it to me. Very generous man, Morty, by the way. And this is personal. When I would run out of money, because I wasn't paid that much, I was paid $3,000. Had a baby, a wife. I had no family money. Quietly, he gave me $100 a month. If I wanted $50 a week, he takes for the animals. There's not enough money for the animals. I needed $15. I get a check for $100 from his office books. He's done that for a lot of people. A lot of people. I was doing the job. I got the office. He'd show up once a week, once every 3 weeks. I'm doing it. That's it. Very important, Roger, you know, in getting me started. Total confidence after the first observations. So I became the head of the endodontic department at Temple in my mind now. Mm-hmm. Students accepted me that way. Staff accepted me that way. And I remember a fellow named Lenny Rosenthal, who was in charge of oral medicine, separate department next door. There was a young guy in there talking endodontics. That was George Stewart one day. And I figured, who is this kid? He had published 10 papers, but I didn't know who he was. And I remember explaining a few things to him and then almost shitting a brick when I realized this is George Stewart. Well, George was over there, I guess, negotiating with Lenny how he can get into Temple because he had just had some little, we'll say, falling out, who knows what. Mm-hmm. And he was looking for...